Hey, baseball fans, go yard with BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. Enjoy top odds on your favorite home run bets, fast and convenient ways to play same-game parlays, special boosts and tokens, and so much more. From the first pitch to the game-winning fireworks, there are more ways than ever to supercharge your excitement. Download the BetMGM app and get your piece of MLB action. BetMGM is an official partner of Major League Baseball. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER available in the U.S. For New York, 8778-HOPE-NY. Or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. First bet offers for new customers only. All other promotions for existing customers. Subject to eligibility requirements. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic. Your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
That's a gay ass podcast.
What? That's a gay ass podcast.
A what?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and this week we have Brian Derrick on the podcast, who is the founder and CEO of Oath, and he's also a gorgeous gay ass Jewess. Now, of course, we talk about politics in this episode because Brian's Instagram is one of the best places to try to actually feel somehow optimistic or at least active during what is an absolute nightmare. So in addition to talking politics, we do have some gorgeous gay ass goss because I want to hear from the gay side of Brian that we don't necessarily get to hear from on the internet. So enjoy this delicious app with Brian Derrick. Holy fucking shit. Brian Derrick, you are on That's a Gay Ass Podcast and looking gorgeous. Tell me, we're recording this on a Sunday. Have you had a gay ass Sunday yet, or has it been boring and straight?
It's been boring and straight. I've been hungover from my gay ass Saturday. Also, happy Passover.
Chag Sameach to you and yours.
The four cups hit hard last night.
Did you do a gay ass Seder?
I did. But that turned into like the eagle. So
isn't it so great to be a gay Jew where we can honor our ancestresses and then also go watch burly men try to finger our pink holes? Exactly. Isn't that so beautiful?
Exactly. We asked at the table, what is our Egypt? And I said, mine is this apartment because I'm on my way out. I'm escaping to the eagle in about an hour. So,
sweetie, I'm exodusting.
Are you doing a Seder?
I am. So I actually got to do a very chill first night Seder with my gorgeous gay married friends. And then tonight I'm going to a big gay Seder where my Catholic husband is making some Jewy food. I'm making a kugel because we don't keep kosher for Passover. Do you judge me?
No, not at all.
Do you keep kosher for Pass?
No.
Okay. Isn't that a good thing to do as Jews, especially adult Jews, but especially gay adult Jews? It's like we can like do the Jewy things that we like. And then why do we want to eat matzah for 8 days? No, gracias.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I did the one Seder and that's going to be the extent of my observance.
Check. Wait, yeah. Before I get into like any actual interviewing, the eagle, how was the vibe last night? And were you at all a dancing queen, a kissy queen? How did the eagle go?
I was a dancing queen. Went with my friend Rob, and we had no plan and a lot of energy. So we were really just there to give it to the girls who wanted to have it. And we had a great time. It's my neighborhood bar, so I'm there quite a bit, honestly. wasn't an extremely late night, but I don't drink a lot anymore. So it hits me so hard.
You're so funny that you're saying that. I, in the same way, I listeners know that I'm like a weed girly and alcohol doesn't really strike me in a delicious way. And yet I had this solo show on Friday night and I had been obviously nervy Nelly about it. And I, after the show, was like, I'm drinking. I need to like blow off some steam. I had a half of a whiskey ginger ale, hold for applause. And the at Akbar in LA, they pour a strong drink halfway through. I was like, I'm drunk. I was drunk.
Didn't even hit the ice.
No.
Wait, congrats on your solo show. That's so amazing. How was it? I wish I was in LA so I could be there.
You're such a mensch. It was so good. And I just have to say, like, you know, when you do it, first of all, solo shows are obnoxious. We can say it. If you're saying like, I'm doing a one-man show, it's like, kill me. And so the whole pressure leading up to it was like, well, what if it joins the list of bad solo shows? But it actually really fucking landed, and it was so, like, you know, soul affirming. And I will say to you, Brian Derrick, as a gay ass Jew, it very much is a very gay Jewy horny story. It's basically like how I went from a nice Jewish boy to a gay Jewish slut. And so I feel like when I bring it to New York, you have to be there to hear about my gay Jewy slut tales.
I will be in the front row at Madison Square Garden, ready for the to go off.
Splash zone, bitch.
No, that's so amazing. I'm super happy for you. I saw the content all over the gram and people seem to really love it. I did. And
Brian, can I tell you something? You are so sweet. And I just want to, if I can butter your biscuit and get into some official questions, you yourself do such a good job on the gram of helping us to stop doom scrolling and to start doing something. And I, of course, want to discuss what we can do politically with you because you have such great perspective. But I obviously want to get to know Brian, the gay guy, on this podcast. So is it cool if we do a gay kiki and then we get into the nightmare of Trump's administration?
Absolutely. I need it to warm up my vocal cords anyway.
Perfect. Lilu lalu, bitch. Okay, so let's do, since we have a gay ass conversation ahead of us, I'm going to ask you first the gay ass podcast question. Brian Derrick, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
Okay, it is Mr. Stevens' fault that I am gay, who was the French teacher in my high school.
I am so on board with a French teacher. Tell me more.
Okay, so he was a young teacher. I'm guessing he was 26 at the time, like 25, 26 probably.
Hot.
Yes, hot. Had like a military cut kind of aesthetic. Was like definitely built, but not like too much, you know.
Sure.
This is in the suburbs of Ohio. And it's his fault because I got to choose, as many public high school students do, between like what language I was going to study.
Spanish or French.
And the correct answer, particularly at the point in time that I was attending high school, was Spanish. Was like, for so many reasons, I needed to learn Spanish. But the French teacher was so hot. And so naturally, parlez-vous français? You know what
oui,
I mean?
Oui, bitch. I have to tell you, it might be a gay person thing because guess what language I studied in high school?
Obviously French.
Français.
Okay, maman. But your high school French teacher was like an older woman. She had like, she wore like long coats.
Okay, first of all, the coats were long to the floor. But she was not, if she's listening, she was not an older, I would say beautifully middle age. But I had two female French teachers. One was like American, but like fucking lived in Montreal. I don't know. And then the other one was like Parisian.
Oof.
Long, yeah. Coat. She was going through a divorce while she was teaching me, weeping at the desk. I mean, just delicious.
You guys stayed after class. You were eating croissants and reading poetry. Yeah.
We were just sisters. But you had the hot gay guy. Was he a French?
Very American. And he was gay. Did I already say that? He was gay. But it was like a secret that he was gay. And so there was like a lot of awakenings happening because he was also probably the first... I'm racking my brain. Probably the first gay person I really met.
And he was like a fucking hot teacher, which is such a great first gay person.
Totally.
I'm going to get into some specifics physically. Color hair. What was?
Dark. Like,
does that mean, did he have arm hair or chest hair poking out of his shirt, or was he giving more
definitely
like?
Definitely both, for sure. I'll send you his Instagram after this.
You follow him on Instagram?
We had drinks in San Francisco years later after when I was in my 20s. We like reconnected. Wait, we're going to have to transition this to your other pod.
Oh my God. Not you dropping the premium horny series. Okay, well, you know what we're going to do then? We're going to make this a moment to say ericwills.substack.com is now where all the premium, and I'm going to leave 5 minutes at the end of this conversation to put that behind a paywall. Brian Tease, I'm so soaking wet right now. Oh my God. Because here's the deal. And I talk about this during the solo show. I've always had a teacher thing. I've always had a thing about like flirting with someone where there's like a slight sense of danger. There's a slight sense of I'm not supposed to do this. And your French teacher is so hitting me where it hurts in the best way.
I feel like you'll be very into him from what I know about your type. I think.
Oh, will be. since we'll give it a bit of an Easter egg and then we'll move on to a new topic. Did he look after you saw him when you had drinks years later? Did he still look hot to you?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, my type has always been like 30s, 40s.
Yeah.
And so that aesthetic only improved for me.
Well, then this is going to bring me to my next gay question for you, because when we're looking back at Brian in high school, specifically Ohio vibes, because you're so into politics now, were you like the student council gay? Were you student class pres? Like, what was your journey in high school?
I was student council president, of course. Yeah, I was sporty when I was younger. I was like soccer, baseball.
Oh, I've seen the legs, Brian. I've seen the legs. We can tell. We can tell.
But I stopped in high school and just like I was an involved kid. That's like a universal term, right? Yeah. So I was just like, I started my school's chemistry club. I was student council. I was such a teacher's pet and like had free blocks to just like help my favorite
programs.
You know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Were you out in high school?
No, not till sophomore year of college.
Oh, sophomore year. So yeah. All of freshman year, then you're like, yeah, I'm straight. Were you hooking up with girls or were you just like?
Not hooking up with anyone. I was like in denial about and just not ready to come out. And it took a lot of work as well as external inspiration and experiences to bridge that gap.
So what you're saying is you were at a party, a guy, while you were both kind of drunk, a guy used it as an opportunity to like, hey, what if we touched mouths? And then you said, why do I like this so much? And
keep
then
going.
Next thing you know, the balls were against your chin.
I mean, it's not far off. It's not far off. That was that's pretty much the journey. Yeah.
Was it a fraternity situation? That is the hero's journey.
I was in a fraternity, but this particular experience was unrelated to my fraternity experience. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that you finally found your way and were able to come out and be this gorgeous gay Jewess. But you also post these really great dance videos when we're celebrating moments. Does that mean you ever did theater growing up? Where did you get your moves?
Oh, my God. These great dance videos. You're shaming me. I was in one musical my freshman year of high school just to try it out. I was feeling
was it?
Wild.
Don't tell me. I'm going to guess. It was It was Footloose.
It was not.
It was Pirates of Penzance.
No. It was think geography, Midwest.
Oklahoma?
Yep. I was a cowboy. Like cowboy number four.
And the cowboys and the farmers should be friends, hun. You know what's funny is my first musical was Oklahoma at the Jewish Community Center in seventh grade.
Oh my God. Speaking of the JCC.
Uh-huh.
That's the last time I saw you. Actually, not the last time, but the first time.
The
was
first
at the
time
JCC.
When you and I did a live recording of That's a Gay Ass podcast at the Upper West Side Jewish Community Center. And how many years ago was that?
It was your 100th episode. I remember.
And now we're at like 200 something. That's crazy. So oh my time. God.
A couple years, couple years.
And by the way, shout out to the four people that were there. It was so.
Those are the real ones.
Those are the real ones. And like, it's funny. I said to you before we recorded this, I was like, you know what? That was so long ago. Let's like treat this as the first. But we do need to sort of acknowledge our history, which is that you have been around for so much of this podcast journey. And then the last time I saw you in person was backstage at Oh Mary.
Oh my God. That's right. Oh, wow. That's crazy. A lot and has then, happened since
and
that.
And then I went to the Eagle after that night at Oh Mary. And because it was during Pride. And I had to swat the old man hands away from my pink hole. Wow. This is all so interesting to see like your journey. Wait, if people want to know then about your like adult situation as a gay man, are you single or taken?
Single, recently went through a breakup.
And if I can send you positivity, I will. So let me send you positivity because breakups are hard. Thank you. Are you starting to feel like your bad bitchiness or are you still grieving?
Yeah, I was like in a crashing out phase and I'm like exiting my crashing out phase and into like a more directed forward motion
chapter. What does Brian do when he's crashing out? Is it Ben and Jer? Is it
Ben and
going
Jer
out and being
like,
reckless? What is it?
Ben and Jer is like the normal. Ben and Jer is for like Mondays through Saturdays kind of vibe.
Sure.
No, definitely going out a lot more because I work a lot. Like a normal week is like an 80-hour type of work week. And so definitely pulled back on that some and have been going out a bunch with my friends. I think that you know like a good chunk of my Jew crew in
Jay
New York.
Cohen, Benj Pasek. When do we get the Bravo reality show?
Oh my God, I know, right? I'm not going to be in that, but it would be very fun for them to be in that.
Well, I love you have this gay Jew crew because also Jake Cohen is single as well. So it's like, are you guys like sort of helping each other navigate the, like what's the dating landscape been like in New York City as a gay man in his 30s?
Correct. Yeah, for sure. We show up for each other in a big way. In those moments, you have to have your girls for that. And we are all what Jake Cohen would call down bitches, where it's like when your friend is crashing out over a breakup and needs to go out until the sunrise or whatever is like you're down. And when they need you to cancel your plans to come over and just like be at home and bring Cafe Panna, then they're also down. And so
and like, Cafe Panna is what?
It's like an ice cream / really cute cafe over on the east side. No, you have to go.
Ice cream is truly my number one. Like you could be like, hey, do you want some ketamine? I'll be like, I actually still have never done it. I would rather have Cafe Panna.
Incredible.
I feel like so much of the difficulty I think of being an adult gay person is like healing your younger self that didn't really get to date because we came out so late. And then actually trying to enjoy and explore whether it's sexually or dating wise, but then also like, you know, look for a partner that feels like mature and well communicated. So I feel like it's just hard to date period as an adult, but especially as a gay person. So are you finding that you are looking more at the apps when you're looking into the dating landscape, or is this like a question you don't even want to talk about because you're still like in your single, I don't want to date?
I'm definitely not looking for dates with people who want a boyfriend at the moment. Yeah. I think that I'm still in a process that doesn't leave me open to that in a serious way. I've done the apps for sure. And I spent most of my 20s single in New York. And it is really hard for sure in this time, in this crazy day and age to both leverage the tools available to us to find connection when oftentimes those same tools, or at least those mediums, are responsible for our feelings of isolation.
100%.
So it can feel a little bit like you're dying of thirst and all you have is salt water, where it like, ooh, it feels like it's right there and it's going to have that like momentary kind of resolution or solve, but it in many ways can, depending on what you're looking for and how you're using it, it can make the problem worse too.
Well, I think it's also true that when you think about dating in New York City, I found that whether it's dating or just being alive there, it's so hard to be surrounded by, what, 8 million people and then to sometimes feel the loneliest you've ever felt. And obviously it happens in any place in the world. But I think like when you're in a major city, whether it's New York, LA or anywhere else, and you're feeling that sense of loneliness or feeling down, it's like, well, wait a minute, I'm surrounded by people, I'm surrounded by things to do. And yet I don't know what actually will feel good, or I just don't feel like a part of anything community wise. And so it's like a double mind fuck, because you feel like then it's your fault or you're the problem.
100%.
And that's what I felt a lot.
Yeah. I think everyone that I know has cried either on the street or in the subway at least once. If you've been in New York for like many years, it has to happen.
Oh, at least one time. I wept publicly more times than I can say. I wept when I had a breakup on the Upper East Side and I was living in Brooklyn. Fuck. And that subway ride is not short.
Totally.
I cried from 86th Street to Clinton, Washington, honey. And then I got an apartment, my first ever apartment, and it was such a harrowing journey to find an apartment. And the second I signed the lease, I called my parents to tell them I got the apartment. I was like 21 years old, 22. And I, instead of being like, I got it, I was like, I got it. My voice caught, wept. I was just like so exhausted by the whole experience.
Totally.
I stood at Houston Street and whatever the fuck and wept.
Oh my God.
But also, I feel like if you're talking about being single in your 20s, did you at least have a chance to like, did you slut it up? Were you able to like kind of sow your oats as a 20s girl?
Definitely. Like both sides of that spectrum. I did the party thing. I was at winter party. I did the Pines a bunch of summers in a row.
Yeah.
And like I like for sure leveraged or like I took advantage of being unattached whenever I could. And for me, I had so little money and my standards were so low that it also freed me to just like do things very spontaneously or on super low budget, because that's what being in New York opened like for me. And so I could just crash on a couch for a weekend, literally anywhere in the world with a friend that you had just met that month or whatever. And it just all New York lends itself to that kind of adventure. And I definitely had that. Yeah, for sure.
Do you think that you are, okay, so let's just sort of continue the thread of you are doing this amazing work politically, you continue to enact positive change, and let's just say you are making delicious money, you have the choice to live anywhere. Is New York the place, or are you like, I could see myself relocating to a different lifestyle or place?
I love New York, and I will always have a strong attachment here. Like I'll always spend a good chunk of every year in New York, probably for the rest of my life, certainly for the next 10 to 20 years. I have been, after being here for this is my 10th year in New York. This is my 10th
Mazel. Year.
Thank you. And I've sort of been exploring other places. Like I'm at a bit of a transition in my life more generally. I've been spending a lot of time in London. And I'm not like up and moving to London, which would not make sense for me professionally, but I do really love it. And it's opening my eyes to there being other places that can feel like home for me, because New York really was that, or has been that. And so I'm excited to spend a little bit of time exploring where else like could be a true home. I'm kind of a country girl, to be honest. And so I'm all over the map in terms of where I could go. Yeah.
Don't you think, though, that New York is the type of place that, of course, is amazing, but part of the amazingness is that you are convinced that it's the only place to live a happy life. It's the only place to thrive. It's the center of the universe. And then I was there for 13 years, and I felt like around year 10, I was like, you know, I love it here, but there might be a life elsewhere. And that's what happened when I visited LA, is that I did like 3 months there. I was working on something and I like was like, oh shit, there's maybe another option. And of course, we can always find our way back to New York. I say this many times, but if/when I make Andy Cohen level of money, I will consider buying my Greenwich Village apartment.
Yeah.
and having a gorgeous New York life.
I mean, let's be clear. There are two New Yorks. Yep. And there's the New York with money. And then there's the New York for everyone else. And
exactly.
We are everyone else. And it's really hard. And no one who loves New York would deny that it's incredibly hard to live here. If you've been here, you know that. And you do it really because of that. That's like a big like part of why, is because of the people that that attracts and the culture that that creates is one of a kind. I do believe that it's the center of the universe. Like it really is the capital of the world. And in so many ways. But I agree with you that that doesn't mean that there cannot be happiness and success and ambition elsewhere. And that might be a bigger part of my journey.
Well, I'm excited to see what that journey is.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
And if we're talking about the current journey, we're kind of going through it. I mean, you might be crashing out personally, but I feel like the country is sort of crashing out in a way. And I myself, I don't consider myself to be smart, but I do want to have a conversation about the politics of it all, and especially like what we can be doing, even for people like me who want to help create positive change and want to actually do something. What would you say for someone like me who is discouraged but overwhelmed as well by all the nightmarish things going on? What would you say is the best way to stay involved or to actually feel a sense of optimism?
Yeah, I think that at the highest level, doing something is really important.
Yeah.
To bring Passover back into it, at our Seder
Please.
Last night, part of the discussion was around, do we confuse witnessing for action?
Mm.
And like it's like has to do with the whole story of Moses and the taskmaster and that kind of thing. But And that really struck a chord with me for what the political moment is, because witnessing, just watching what's going on, is in and of itself exhausting. And we can oftentimes confuse that for like, oh, I'm doing something by reading the news, watching the news, reading what's happening, talking to friends about it. It can feel like that's enough, but really that is a drain that does not recharge your battery at all. It's like only one direction kind of thing. Whereas doing something actually can recharge that same battery that keeps you involved. And so I think more specifically, that can look like a lot of different things. The timing was bad for your solo show, but Bernie and AOC just had this massive rally in LA. And I have so many friends who went to that. Everyone you know is there. And that's like a great way to show up, right? To find community and find energy in what you believe in and what you're passionate about that can recharge that battery. Also doing simple things like making a phone call, under 3 minute phone call, leaving a voicemail can actually recharge that battery for you, right? When a bill is about to pass and you call a member of Congress and say, this is fucked and you shouldn't.
I mean, I did that because of what you posted on Instagram, because it really is, at first you think making the call, I don't know the number, I don't know what to say. And when people like you give us those sort of rules or guidelines, it really is 3 minutes maximum, but it does do that recharging that I think that is so much more effective than like doom scrolling or going to whatever news site you prefer. And it's like,
we're living in a time, I think, that there is so much information for how we can help, but I think that it's hard to know where to look for it. And so I really am grateful for you for making it more accessible. But if we're talking about the AOC and Bernie rally, you're actually on a new show asked if they are the face of the Democratic movement, especially to take down Trump. And you said that they are really resonating because they have a clear message that is really feeling accessible to us. But you said it's not, they might not necessarily be the face. I don't even have like specific names, but do you have any sort of like idea of what we are going to look forward to when it comes to the takedown of Trump, or maybe sort of like normalcy or respect reigning again?
Yeah, I think the word again is sticky there, or tricky there, because I don't think there is going back to what normal was before. I genuinely think in this moment we have to create what a new normal is going to look like,
yeah,
that can serve everyone, can serve more people than what the Trump administration is trying to do to serve billionaires and Elon Musk and all those things that we all know. It's going to take new leadership and new ideas to create that new normal. And so I think that what AOC and Bernie are doing is so important and so powerful because of that very clear message that they have, like you said. And I think that we're going to need a lot of new faces entering this work, both through elected officials and outside of that, right? When you look at who's powerful on the right, it's not just people who were elected to office. Many of the most powerful people were never elected to anything. But we need those types of people to step up in this moment to create what a post Trump America can look like that does support democracy and the middle class and all of these things, rather than what we have right now.
Well, it's also interesting when we talk about what's going on in the landscape for queer people. Obviously, the bills being passed, or the like insane messaging about the trans community. To me, what's so embarrassing about it is that history continues to repeat itself, because obviously when gay marriage was being discussed, what's going to happen next? We're going to be able to marry dogs. And then all of a sudden, it's like, okay, sure, I guess we're kind of okay with gay people marrying, even though, of course, there are still some states trying to roll back same-sex marriage. But with the trans attitude right now, it's the same thing. It's like dehumanizing, and it is just so fucking annoying to see that the playbook is repeated over and over and over to try to take away the humanity of a group of people that is truly doing nothing.
Yeah. I have a whole presentation that I give in like sometimes corporate-ish environments that puts side by side the signs and slogans of the Anita Bryant anti-gay movement to what's happening now in the attacks on the trans community. And the signs are the same. The slogans are the same. The playbook is the same. It's such a fucking tired, old, like fear-mongering bullshit shit show. And it's working. That's what's really crazy is it's working. The big difference between what happened then and how we won that fight and what's happening now is there are like 10x as many gay people, LGB people, as there are trans people.
Yeah.
And so once people started coming out en masse, this is the whole Harvey Milk moment of, and it became, oh, they're talking about my neighbor, my uncle, my friend, my cousin, whoever. It was so much less scary, and the fear mongering didn't work. Whereas 70% of the country, I'll pull the exact stat. NBC has a good thing about this, but about 70% of the country doesn't know someone who is trans. And so they'll believe what they're told. And we have not had a compelling narrative, a strong enough narrative around who trans people really are and what the counter argument is. And so we are currently losing this battle in the court of public opinion. And it's really scary to see what's happening both through the courts and through legislatures as well.
Yeah, it's a great and scary point, because I think ultimately humanizing any of the people that are being demonized in this way is the way that the course of the public opinion will change. But I think that it's probably like what exposure therapy when it comes to like the more trans people that we uplift and hear their stories and of course hear about the humanity and the beauty of our trans family members, that I think will be one of the only ways to actually yet again somehow, quote unquote, prove ourselves that we are not these monsters that are, you know, attacking people in bathrooms. And it's like, it's just so, again, embarrassing that it's happening again and again. But speaking about embarrassing cycles, you also post about the sort of Trump cycle that happens over and over and over. You have, this is the Trump playbook: create a problem, then blame someone else loudly, then undo the problem that you created, then claim credit for solving, and then rinse and repeat. And this is what's happening with the tariff drama. Do you think that the tariff drama will do anything to wake some of his base up? Or do you think that it's going to continue to be another thing that they forgive?
Oh, his base is unpersuadable.
Okay.
I think that the data shows that maybe 1 in 7 or 1 in 8 like true Trump believers can be moved with like any amount of like information or that kind of thing. But it's not his base who got him elected. It was the middle. And I know that it's hard for people to like see that sometimes, especially when we spend as much time online as we do, but there is a movable middle, and you cannot hide from the economy. It is what did Biden in, like, I mean, ultimately into Kamala, but you cannot hide from the economy. Trump has so publicly attached himself to this nonsense that either the economy is going to recover and be amazing and he'll be in the same position that he was 2 months ago before he started destroying it, or it's, right, as we predict, he's going to stick to his guns. He's going to continue to destroy markets and supply lines. Everything's going to get more expensive. People's retirement savings are going to be destroyed. And 100% that will move people away from him. I mean, we've already, since the initial tariff announcement, seen a 35-point swing, which is literally like unheard of, in the 18 to 29 category.
Really? I haven't read about that.
Super young people who were kind of just frustrated, and they went to school during COVID and like saw all this stuff happening online last year, went to Trump in big numbers compared to 2020. And those are the exact voters who have been like, what? I didn't sign up for this. I wanted stuff to be cheaper and I wanted better pay. That's not what they're getting. And they're fleeing.
Well, remember the whole thing? I remember when I was a kid and the whole joke was fiscally conservative, socially liberal. And I think that that is something that I remember when I first came out. I remember saying to my family, because my family didn't really talk too much about politics. And then when I came out, I was 18. I went to NYU and Obama was elected that year.
Oh my God.
So I was immediately, quote unquote, radicalized to be like, oh my God, like you are actually voting for or against my interests if you are voting Republican, especially when that was when, you know, I was not allowed to get married. And so it is to me so funny that even someone as insane as Trump, people are still saying, well, I'm voting because of the economy. And then he gets into office and it's like, I hope you're happy, bitch. I hope you're happy now.
Oh my God. It is very that. And I think that people have been not shy online about pointing that out. I was on News Nation and I really had to restrain myself from being like, I told ya.
Yeah.
I've been here for the last 2 years telling you that this is what was going to happen. But yeah, we all knew. He said he was going to. He's done it. It's had the exact horrifying effects that we knew that it would. We'll see what happens after the 90-day pause.
Oh, yeah. I have a question for you about when it comes to like online stuff. Do you worry at all about backlash from the government specifically? Because we're living in kind of a scary era where there are people who are either posting anti-Trump sentiment or, of course, people being targeted abroad. Of course, the whole immigration thing is a nightmare. But do you yourself worry about vocalizing anti-Trump sentiment, or do you think we should be worried about being loud in our full displeasure, hatred, disgust, and what's going on?
I say prepare for it. Don't live in fear of it. Okay. It shouldn't stop anyone. It's more important than ever when they're trying to create a culture of fear that you continue to stand firm in the face of that. That's like
good call.
What they're counting on. People like to post about like don't comply in advance kind of thing. Silencing yourself is just as bad as having them forcibly silence you.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, I have an entire organization that is working in the political space and employees who rely on us existing and paying them. So I have taken steps on that front and meet with lawyers and that kind of thing. But no, I'm not afraid of posting online how much I think, how much damage I think Trump is doing to the country, what I feel about our political catastrophes of the day. And I don't think that other people should either.
What about when we talk about the future? And obviously, one day Trump will not be in office unless his dream comes true of getting 15 consecutive fucking runs in office. Do you think that Mayor Pete will be our first gay president?
Ooh! Yeah, Trump will be like Senator Palpatine. If you're a Star Wars gay.
I knew that's what it was from, but I was not fully able. I don't know a single plot point, but
okay. Yeah.
Thank you for representing the nerds.
Crusty. He looks crusty. Always nerd representation. I enjoy Mayor Pete. I like Pete Buttigieg. I think that he's an awesome messenger. He has a beard now, so he's slowly moving into my general
daddy territory.
I have a fear that the first person to run, oftentimes it's like about that. And I think that his first run was like for the country, not for him, but like for how people responded in some ways was about him being gay. Uh-huh. Kind of like Hillary Clinton. And in 2016, it was like so much about her being a woman. Yeah, I'm with her. And like, I think the idea is that like when more people run, it's less and less about that thing because the story has already been run. How many stories do we need about how many pantsuits she owns? You know what I mean? Like eventually people are just like tired of that. And then you focus more on the person. I hope that Pete can be also the beneficiary of his own sort of trailblazing.
Yeah.
That a second run could be less about it. But I don't know if he will like be the one to take up that mantle or
he seems to be the person that people are like, oh my God, it's so refreshing to see someone stick to the data points and stick to the clear messaging when he goes on Fox News and when he gives incredibly concise but effective statements about what's going on. And so that's what I would want him to be known for, is the very like, I don't know if he's a spectrum girly, but I appreciate his ability to take the emotion out of it. And so that's what I would want him to be known for, is just like the fucking cut to the chase. Let's talk about sense. And he just happens to have a beautiful gay husband and children. And, you know, like I think ultimately our first gay president, whether it's Mayor Pete or not, is going to be a fucking great president of gay experience. And it's not like you're saying like, look at the pantsuits, look at the
Agreed.
Who are they wearing?
100%. And I mean, that's what it takes, right? Is you have to overperform in order to overcome people's whatever they're projecting onto their assumptions of you.
Yeah.
And he has like done that extremely well.
Do you think when we get a gay president, do you think you and I will be at the pride party at the White House?
Babe, I'm throwing that. Like I'm literally the one making the list. I just want you to know.
What
but you'll have VIP. You'll be in the Oval.
Clearance.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm so excited for the one day that Trump is gone and we can talk about the nightmare that we were living in. And if you were to manifest a beautiful day where Trump is out of office, let's go out of politics for a second. And can you manifest to me, you can go any location in the world and you want to have a beautiful gay day, what country, what city, and what are you doing on your beautiful gay day? You can take it as far as gay beach, you could go gay club, you could go beautiful restaurant, you could go, you're hooking up with Anderson Cooper. Give me a manifesting a beautiful gay day. Where are you? What are you doing?
So my gay happy place, I have a few happy places. Gay happy place still is and always will be Fire Island.
Mm.
I think that it is my gay happy place because it is what we made for ourselves. We christened it and we set aside this space. We come to this place for laughs.
For loads.
And because it's so remote, if you've never been, it's an island off of Long Island, just outside of New York. It is really remote. You can only get there by boat. And so you totally detach from the world. You could be anywhere. You could be in the Indian Ocean. You could be like, you're not. you're not. You're in the bay. But it's where I find such a strong sense of community. There's such a strong history there that I feel deeply connected to around gay men trying to find a space where they could totally be, where they could set the rules and where they could be themselves. And that's pre-AIDS crisis, during the AIDS crisis, post. And so, not to bring up AIDS on my happy day, but like it's a huge
You're
part
honoring
of
the herstory.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
You feel it resonating in the walls of Fire Island.
It's what feels like beyond just a momentary, like fleeting happiness and more of a sense of belonging to me. And I feel that when I'm in the Pines. So in the Pines with my girls, if Jonathan Bailey is there in some trunks, that's going to be a cherry on top for the day. And
I just posted the video of Jonathan Bailey. He's like doing that body roll dance. He's shirtless. He is like, you see this beautiful body hair. And I just think whenever we feel down, we should go back to Jonathan Bailey body rolling and us seeing his hairy torso gyrate.
Can I drag you? That's what I came here to do. Can I drag you for a second?
You can absolutely drag me.
On the first episode that I did, you asked me who my celebrity crush was. I said Jonathan Bailey, and you did not know who that was.
Actually, I'm thrilled to be dragged in this way because it shows that I am human and that I fucking grew. I did not know who he was. Well, it was because of Bridgerton.
Yeah, I knew him from not that because I didn't see that. But
what do you know him from?
I think theater.
Are you fucking kidding me? You're that much of a theater queen?
That's like always a scary moniker to be thrown my way.
Because then I'll be like, okay, what's your favorite scene in Starlight Express? Wait, that is so... I love that drag. Thank you for dragging because
You're welcome.
Did not know Jonathan Bailey at a time when I should have. And look at me now just pretending.
I mean, he went vertical. He was literally an unknown. And now he's like... arguably like the most famous gay lead actor.
Well, there's like straight women who are like soaking wet, like even knowing that he's gay. And I'm like, that's how you know. If like women are like, they know they can never fuck him and yet they're still fantasizing about it. Like,
he invented slutty glasses. He yes. invented short shorts.
Yes.
He invented that hair thing that he does. Like, he's yes. really having a whole moment.
Have you ever met him in person?
I have not. I've put out feelers. none of my friends are friends with him because I feel like, especially I'm talking more so before Wicked level fame.
Yeah.
He should not have been like that hard to get to. It's a small gay world, especially
it is.
Living in New York or LA.
Yeah.
And none of, we have like no mutuals. So if someone not listening, yet. Yeah, I was going to say, if one of your listeners could please put me in fucking touch, that would be great.
I cannot wait for the reunion where we talk about having met Jonathan Bailey. Would you put a pause on your not dating and would you date Jonathan Bailey?
Give me a fucking ring. I'm ready for long-term commitment.
Your kids would be so beautiful.
Oh my god.
You hot ginger and Jonathan Bailey hot. Ooh. Would watch. Now because we have to sadly get to the final question of this interview before we roll over to the premium horny question that I am going to be putting on the Substack. Brian Derrick, final question of That's a Gay Ass Podcast. If the world was ending, you could only save one character actress. Who would you save?
Jodie Foster.
Ooh, lesbian.
I fucking love Jodie Foster. I think she's so talented. I love her movies, like across the board. Panic Room is one of the most underrated films of like all time. Contact.
Contact made me gay.
Wait, is that your answer to that question?
It's one of. So I kind of keep adding to the gay folder of what made me. And Contact, I don't know if that gave me daddy issues, but like her like going into the new realm of the universe and then being there with her hot dad, I'm like, okay, I'll take a ride in that scary fucking
Believe Women. Like that's Believe like
that's Women,
the original Believe Women.
And the fact that she's also a big lesbian is so chic. I mean, totally. One of the best actors of our generation being fully gay is so and she really is like incredible.
Yeah,
across the board.
Yeah, she like can't miss for me. I feel like the other one that would be honorable mention for me that's like growing in my adoration is Zoe Saldana.
Oh.
Who also is like
center stage.
So badass. I need like all of my answers are actually going to be women who I can watch like kill people, you know?
So then, yeah, who are, Uma Thurman does it, made me gay in Kill Bill.
Yeah. I probably watch both Kill Bill movies at least once a year, maybe twice a year.
Oh yeah, they're the yellow sort of shiny
invented fashion.
And then another woman that kills is Michelle Yeoh in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. That made me gay. I love to watch a woman kill. And you have killed your answers on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. I want to thank you for being so open, especially as like a gay who's working in politics. I feel like it's not the easiest thing to be such a well-formed human that shows all of your colors. And the fact that you did it here on That's a Gay Ass Podcast, I really mean it. Just like it's so, so special. And I adore you. And I'm just so thankful that you came on. Can you tell the listeners where they can follow you and if anything you'd like them to know?
Well, thank you for having me. I'll be glad to be back with Jonathan on my arm next time. And
the ring.
And the ring. And in the interim, you can find me on Instagram at Brian Derrick.
Gorgeous. Brian, I'll see you over at the premium. We're going to do a 5-minute chat about the hot teacher. Okay, bye. Thanks for listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast. I so love talking to Brian Derrick, and I hope you sort of at least were able to take a breath when it comes to the political nightmare stuff or just commiserate with us. If you would like to hear the additional content that we discuss, including his hot French teacher, go to ericwills.substack.com. And there is also a bonus episode this week there with Tyler Mead, the stand-up comedian with a big old bubble booty, which we talk about that and many other hot, hot stories. So I love you all so much. Have a great rest of your week, and I'll see you next Wednesday. Bye.
You've been listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, hosted by me, Eric Williams. If you want to see and hear more, make sure you're subscribed to us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, or Patreon at Gay Ass Podcast. That's a Gay Ass Podcast is executive produced by Eric Williams and produced by Nathaniel McClure. We'll see you next week.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.